From Maine Public Radio and mainepublic.org, I'm Ari Snyder with the news on This Day in Maine, Friday, May 30th, 2025. The Department of Homeland Security says the city of Portland and Cumberland and Hancock counties are deliberately defying federal immigration laws. As Nicole Ogrisco reports, it's not clear how the jurisdictions plan to respond.
DHS said it's providing the notice to more than 500 so-called sanctuary jurisdictions across the country. It's demanding they immediately revise their policies to comply with federal immigration laws. In a statement, Cumberland County Sheriff Kevin Joyce said he expected the notice, which he received Thursday night. He said the notice was being provided to agencies that didn't enter into agreements with Immigration and Customs Enforcement. Those agreements give local officers authority to enforce some aspects of federal immigration law. Cumberland County is housing people in ICE custody, so Joyce said he wasn't sure how the county would be considered uncooperative. In a statement, Portland Mayor Mark Dion said he hadn't yet received a formal notice from DHS and would decline comment until the department had outlined specific facts supporting their assertion. Portland has an ordinance directing staff and police not to ask about a person's immigration status in most situations unless required by law or court order. In the past, Dion has said that Portland has not declared itself a sanctuary city. Hancock County did not immediately respond to a request for comment. For Maine Public Radio News, I'm Nicole Ogrisco.
More than 100 people rallied outside Portland City Hall Friday morning calling for the release of two Brazilian men who advocates say were arrested by Border Patrol near Portland earlier this week. According to friends and family members, Marcus Enrique and Lucas Segovia were detained by Border Patrol following a traffic stop while on their way to a carpentry job. Segovia's stepfather, Marco Silva, says the two men are not criminals and that his stepson had an active green card application.
I have nothing against the country fighting crime. No, it's not the point. It's messing up families' life.
A Border Patrol spokesperson said agents responded to a Maine State Police request to identify the two men and determined that neither had legal status to be in the U.S. The spokesperson said the two men have since been turned over to ICE for removal proceedings. After opening a health center in Bridgeton 4 years ago, DFD Russell Medical Center says it will close the clinic at the end of August. As Patty White reports, the nonprofit says the decision is driven by financial and workforce challenges.
Leaders at DFD Russell say in a written statement that they face many financial pressures, from losing a vital community grant to low reimbursement rates from commercial insurers to ongoing uncertainty around Medicare and Medicaid. Combined with the difficulty of recruiting skilled providers to rural Maine, they say they made the difficult decision to close the Bridgeton Health Center. It's one of four locations operated by DFD Russell and serves roughly 1,700 patients. Leaders say staff will help patients transition to other practices in the area. Health providers across Maine, both large and small, face precarious financial positions. In April, Community Clinical Services in Lewiston announced it was closing several clinics and laying off 40 staff. And this week, Northern Light Inland Hospital in Waterville permanently closed. For Maine Public Radio News, I'm Patty White.
Voters are expected to decide this fall whether Maine will join about 20 other states with red flag gun laws. But state lawmakers got into a procedural standoff today over whether the legislature must first hold a public hearing on the issue. Kevin Miller reports.
Earlier this year, the Maine Gun Safety Coalition submitted enough signatures for a ballot question proposing a, quote, extreme risk protection order law, also known as red flag laws. These allow family members to ask a court to order someone to temporarily relinquish their guns if they pose a danger to themselves or others. This would be an expansion of Maine's yellow flag law, which only allows police to initiate the gun confiscation process with the courts. But Democrats and Republicans on the legislature's Judiciary Committee sparred Friday over whether they had to hold a public hearing on the issue before sending it to voters. Here's Republican Representative Rachel Henderson of Rumford and the committee's co-chair, Democratic Senator Ann Carney of Cape Elizabeth.
According to state law, if we don't have a public hearing on this bill, it's against the law.
And I guess I would just point out that the Constitution is different than the statute, and I think the Constitution actually takes precedent over the statute.
Politics appear to be at play here. Republicans and gun owners' rights groups oppose red flag laws, and a public hearing is a high-profile way to air that opposition. But Carney says this ballot initiative will ultimately be decided by voters, not the legislature. For Maine Public Radio News, I'm Kevin Miller.
50 years ago, an army of tiny caterpillars invaded Maine's North Woods. They devoured millions of acres of spruce and fir trees and left a vast landscape of skeletal trunks. The legendary spruce budworm outbreak lasted more than a decade, sparked a massive aerial pesticide campaign, and turned the forest industry on its head. Now, after years of quiet, one of the most destructive forest insects in North America is back. And as Peter McGuire reports, this time, landowners are prepared.
Kneeling on the forest floor, Neil Thompson takes a handsaw to the trunk of a young fir tree in a commercial timber stand. It's a two-hour drive down bumpy logging roads to the nearest U.S. town, yet within eyesight of a Canadian settlement just over the border. And this spot in northernmost Maine is the epicenter of a blossoming spruce budworm outbreak. This tree looks healthy, but it's riddled with tiny worms smaller than a grain of rice. And cutting it down is the way to see how bad the infestation is. Thompson leans in to get a closer look.
So if I go ahead and stop pulling that apart.
Thompson points to microscopic webbing and a tiny entrance hole on the tree's tender bud.
Can't always find them, but often can. There he is. Nice little guy.
A forestry professor at the University of Maine, Fort Kent, Thompson monitors trees to track the insect's development. For years, he's been reporting his findings to a central database. He says this year, the budworm population in some places is so heavy that they can devour entire patches of forest.
They'll work through the current year foliage almost immediately and then start back feeding on this old stuff, and they could strip this tree.
The caterpillars are native to northern forests, and they typically go through cycles of population explosions and relative stability. All indicators suggest a new outbreak is looming. Fueled by an ongoing infestation in Quebec, budworm levels in northern Maine are on the verge of being considered out of control on several hundred thousand acres. And forest owners are scrambling to prevent a repeat of the 1970s and 80s. Vern Labby was a state forester back then.
You know, it was really weird as a forester walking through a fully stocked stand and pretty much needing suntan lotion because there was so much sunlight on the forest floor, even though it was full of trees, but they were all dead.
Labby remembers the government bringing in surplus military planes and installing an airfield to help spray pesticides over more than a million acres a year.
It was stark. You'd fly around, and where it was sprayed, it was green, and where it wasn't sprayed, it was dead. Pretty much 100% mortality.
Companies built the first roads deep into the woods to salvage swaths of dead trees. So much of the forest was cut down that it sparked reforms to Maine's forestry laws and a controversial anti-clear-cutting referendum. And the pesticide program generated concern for wildlife and habitat. Nowadays, Labby runs a Christmas tree farm in Frenchville, and he checks his trees every day for signs of an infestation.
To have zero damage is probably not realistic. You're going to have damage, you know, with the insect population we have. So it's just a matter of how much damage can you sustain and still have a saleable product.
According to a coalition of timberland companies, a severe outbreak in Maine could cost thousands of jobs, cripple the forest products industry, and increase the risk of wildfires. To head off that scenario, landowners are gearing up for another aerial spray program called an early intervention strategy. Alex Ingram is the president of Pingree Associates, one of the state's biggest landowners.
We believe there is a good solution that will be far superior to what was done in the 70s and allow for us to treat the problem at the start instead of at the peak of panic.
The plan, funded with $14 million state and federal dollars, is to hit the budworm hotspots with a chemical called tebufenicide, which the Environmental Protection Agency classifies as, quote, practically non-toxic to mammals and birds. Another option is BTK, a bacterial formula sometimes used by organic farmers. Ingram says the campaign is taking every precaution to apply pesticides safely.
We've taken a really serious approach to making sure that we're doing this the right way. We're being very tactical in terms of what areas we're treating, because this is not cheap. This is an expensive process, and we want to make sure that we're spending dollars wisely.
Back in Aroostook County, Neil Thompson drives his pickup over rutted roads to the next monitoring site. He says New Brunswick has been treating hotspots annually for 10 years. So far, the province has avoided a widespread outbreak. If pesticides just slightly increase the budworm's natural death rate, then Thompson says birds and other insect enemies will do the rest.
There is no hope of any effective program without the help of the predators, parasites, and pathogens.
The Maine Forest Service says spraying will take place by mid-June and is closing roads to keep the public out. It will take up to a year to learn whether treatment is a success. But based on New Brunswick's experience, keeping an outbreak at bay could be a long, expensive process. For Maine Public Radio News, I'm Peter McGuire.
And that's today's Maine News. For more stories, visit mainepublic.org. Join us tomorrow morning at 8 for Weekend Edition on Maine Public Radio. I'm Ari Snyder. Thanks for listening.